Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Welcome in. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day. I'm Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin Cowherd. Thank you so much. Man, we got a jam-packed show for you. Coming up in 15 minutes, you know the movie In Love and Basketball? Why love and basketball, love and sports are very much aligned. Little things. The chemistry. We'll get to that upcoming. I want to start with the Zion hype train. And look, I've been a conductor on this thing. I just have. I love to watch Zion Williamson play. And when the Duke Blue Devils take the floor tonight, I, just like everybody else, will be watching. Tonight is it's big boy basketball. You got the Blue Bloods. Duke, Carolina, Kentucky, Michigan State. Right? Like four programs synonymous with college excellence, synonymous with great coaching and great players. And you have likable stories across the board. Carolina and their style. PJ Washington returning, we think, for the Kentucky Wildcats and all that Kentucky has to offer with John Calipari. Duke with Zion and Coach K and Michigan State, who has a little bit of the little engine that could, considering the injuries and the two departures to the NBA, which has seemingly made Michigan State a better team. But I was listening to Colin's show earlier this week, and if he took calls, I would have been the first caller. If he looked at his phone, which he sometimes does during a break, I would have texted him. Instead, I was driving on the 405, and I'm like, what are you doing? What are you talking about? Because what Colin did was he took a tweet from Paul Pierce and then he doubled down on it. Paul Pierce said, and this was from his Twitter account, hot take for all of you, Zion Williamson is already a top 50 current basketball player in the world. Now, look, I can sit here and debate back and forth with Paul Pierce, who is a contemporary. He and I were actually roommates way back when at the ABCD camp, and he said, I'm going to be the best player in high school basketball. And he probably was in 1995. That's a class that had Kevin Garnett, was probably the best player. Stephon Marbury. And you got Vince Carter. Paul was right there. This was, in fact, a hot take. Because in order to be a top 50 basketball player in the world at 18 years old, that would make him better than the top two players on every team. And keep in mind that some teams have more than top two players, right? Like, name me a Golden State Warrior starter who Zion Williamson is better than today. And what we're doing is we're conflating an argument. Would you trade an all-star to get Zion Williamson? Maybe, and maybe yes. Yes. Look, I see it. He's the next version of Draymond Green, a guy who can guard any position and can kind of play any position. He can actually shoot the basketball a little bit, whereas Draymond's shot has fallen off. His body has kind of fallen apart, whereas, with the exception of twisting a knee because his shoe blew up, there's been no issues with Zion Williamson's body. But Colin said he's a top 20 player right now. And I want you to take a breath, because you're going to have to stop and tell me who he's better than. You know, is he better than LeBron or James Harden or Paul George or Kawhi or Joel Embiid or Steph or Giannis or Kevin Durant or Damian Lillard or Devin Booker or Kemba or Jimmy Butler or Ben Simmons or Klay Thompson or Kyrie? No! Do you know how you lose games in the NBA when you're trying to tank? You play your younger players. The same argument we make against people who sit at seats like this on TV channels and radio networks like this and say Duke could compete with NBA teams like the Cleveland Cavaliers is the exact same argument I'll make about Zion. Look, there's a legit conversation to be had that NBA people are trying to figure out is, Is John Moran actually a better prospect than Zion Williamson? Zion Williamson is a happening. He makes basketball fun. He makes you think the impossible might be possible. But I hate to be the guy that throws cold water on this thing. But if you watched yesterday, you realize that Purdue lost four starters and is playing in the Elite Eight. Texas Tech lost four starters and is playing in the Elite Eight. Hell, even Michigan lost Mo Wagner, their one pro from last year, and Muhammad Ali Abdul-Rahman, and they're just as good in terms of wins and losses as they were last year. Michigan State's going to play tonight. They lost their two lottery picks and don't have a lottery pick on their team, and they won the Big Ten and won the Big Ten tournament. Why is that? Well, the truth is that college basketball is trending the way of college baseball. Look, if you're anything or any good, you at least think you're a one and done. Think about how many guys have left early. And so the attrition of guys leaving early has allowed programs like the Nevadas of the world, you know, to compete. Or even Gonzaga, where you have late bloomers like a Brandon Clark. The idea is this. You have to understand who Zion is competing against. He does look like a man against boys because he's playing against boys. When you're a boy playing against men, you look like a boy. If you've seen him in person, you know that upper body, he looks like a brick you-know-what house. But his lower body is still thick. He hasn't yet leaned out. He hasn't yet lost all that body fat. He's just now beginning to shoot the basketball, kind of a set shot from college three-point range. Hey, in the NBA, here's the saying. You don't get longer. You don't get faster. Everybody else does. The shots are deeper. Yes, the floor opens up and you can score more, but you can also get exposed more. Look, I'm not sitting here going to tell you Zion Williamson stinks or that eventually he doesn't project to be a likely all-star. I love him. But at 18 years old, with 20 games under his belt, playing for the Duke Blue Devils, as an undersized power forward who continues to improve and impress, let's catch our breath. In order for him to be a top 20 player in the NBA, he has to be better than two-thirds of the league's best players on their team. And that's just, look at D'Angelo Russell, who is the number two pick, who absolutely dominated college basketball. He comes out, and it's not till year four where he's an all-star. That doesn't mean that Zion won't be better than D'Angelo Russell, but right now, if you're going to play a game tomorrow, no one on earth in the NBA who loves basketball and loves Zion Williamson would take Zion ahead of D'Angelo Russell. No one, not a single soul, not a human being. I mean, you wouldn't take him ahead of Jason Tatum, would you? Of course not. Jason Tatum's got a couple years in the league now, plus the year under his belt at Duke. You wouldn't take him ahead of Kemba Walker, would you? Look, I'm already three deep on the Boston Celtics. He'd be three deep on the Boston Celtics roster, and I haven't gotten to Al Horford. Al Horford, well, he moves, he's slow. Yeah, but you know what? If I want to win a basketball game tonight, not look good, not dunk good, I take Al Horford 6 days a week, twice on Sunday. Let's not conflate the argument about what he could project to be and why some people may move mountains in order to get him with the conversation of what he is today. Have reasonable expectations. The reason you play young players in order to tank is because they're just not as good as the older players. They haven't yet hit their basketball prime. Let's stop making insane arguments. Insane arguments like, he's a top 20 player in the world. No, he's not. He's probably not a top 50 player in the world. Is he a top 50 prospect? Would you rather have him than 30 other guys in the NBA? Maybe. Sure. I'll have that conversation. But this is like the conversation of, would you trade LeBron James? You can't, because he's not moving. It's not happening. Stop having conversations over things that aren't possible and aren't comparable. He looks like a man against boys because he's playing against boys. Anyone who pays any attention will tell you that college basketball, as much as I love it, I've covered it for 16 years. I played it for five. I've been around it my entire life. I'm going to take my son to the Final Four. This is like my 13th or 14th Final Four that I've been to. Actually, maybe more. I got to redo my math. I can quote chapter and verse in all of them. And the reason he looks like a man playing against boys is because he's playing against boys. And a boy playing against a man looks like that. So catch your breath. Understand that what a guy projects to be is not what a guy is now. Enjoy this ride, whether it ends tonight against Virginia Tech, who does have grown-ups, who does have more man-like bodies, or if it ends in a national championship crowned in Minnesota, where Duke has won two national titles. However it ends, just enjoy it. Know that he's probably going to be the first. He might be the second-round pick, and people are having a discussion about, hey, boy, I kind of like Ja, and Ja Morant is a dominant ball-handling point guard, which you look around the NBA, and from the rookies, you know, like Trae Young, or, you know, maybe even Luka, who's not really a point guard, but like a point power forward, guys that have the ball in their hands more, and then you go to a James Harden, and you go to a Steph Curry, and you go to a Damian Lillard, or you go to a Russell Westbrook. Those guys have the ball in their hands so much, they make so many more plays, they have a better value. This is like a quarterback, like a Kyler Murray versus a Nick Bosa, right? That's essentially what this argument is. Ja Morant is a Kyler Murray type. Quarterbacks have way more value than a defensive end, no matter how highly rated a defensive end is. And I think having a small ball power forward center, even if he's only 6'5" and a half, 6'6", if he can guard all four, five positions, then he can make a shot, he can pass, he has a high basketball IQ and a ridiculous pair of legs, he has value. That's an actual conversation taking place. But nobody who's reasonable is having a conversation whether or not he's a top 20 player in the world, because we know it's men and he's playing against boys.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, let's bring him in. He played over a decade in the NBA. Of course, won an NBA title. He's Matt Barnes. He joins us here in The Herd. You know, it's interesting, Matt. I mean, you are a guy who brought kind of toughness and cohesiveness and chemistry to every team that you played on. And I do think, like, whether it's the Warriors and what Andre Iguodala brings to them and what Sean Livingston has brought to them, or whether it's last night with Kay Clark, the kid from the Valley, mm-hmm. brings to Virginia. Right. Like, we are all trained. Our eyes are trained to look at the stars. But it's those other guys that do the little things right. that really make championship teams, no?
You can be a star in your role, you know, and necessarily you have two or three superstars, you know, now what the NBA is, two or three superstars, but you can always be a star in your role. And I think that's what gives some guys longevity. You know, I was allowed to play 14 years, you know, Sean and Iggy or, you know, can play as long as they want. I think it's, you know, once you understand what your role is, you can be a star in that role. You don't have to necessarily be a superstar, but you could be a star in that role and understand your role and have a long career.
All right, let me just quickly put a cap on last night and get ready for tonight. Last night, Purdue wins. They shoot the eyes out of the basketball, and Tennessee has this incredible comeback. Did you have any issue with the foul call at the end of regulation between Purdue and Tennessee?
He got fouled. You know, he got fouled.
Got to protect the shooter, right?
Right, exactly. You know what I mean? It looked like he was out. I don't know if he was exactly out at all the angles, but, you know, at the end of the day, he got fouled, and that's one thing you definitely have to do is, as a shooter, once you're up in the air, you're as vulnerable as it can be. You know, so if you're not protected, it gets dangerous. And like you said, he made two out of three of the free throws, and then Tennessee had a chance to win it again in overtime and couldn't. But it's been a great tournament. It's been fun to watch. You know, I finally got my twins into actually sitting down and getting off their iPads and watching college basketball, which
me
is
too.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So it's been a fun time to watch.
Yeah, me too. My son's always been like YouTube and
right.
and then watching highlights. I'm like, no, actually watch the game.
Watch the games.
Watch how
right.
people play against the zone.
Right.
Why do they play zone?
Right.
Because it works.
Right.
Okay, tonight we're going to see Zion. And look, I've talked to NBA people and they're like, we all love Zion, and since about midseason, it's been that he's going to be the number one pick.
Mm-hmm.
But then you watch John Morant and you look at the league,
mm-hmm.
and you look at how dominant ball handlers dominate this league,
mm-hmm.
at least in the regular season, whether it's from Steph to James Harden to what Trae Young is doing now here late in the season as a rookie. And like, I think Zion projects to be some form of Barkley meets Draymond meets Blake Griffin, right? Like a small ball five starting at your power forward. And he's got some work to do in his jump shot, but he seems to have a high basketball IQ and a motor. His body's a little bit in question. Can you play it that big? If you took away the fact that his name is Zion Williamson and he's a thing, he's going to sell out every seat in your barn for the entire year. Who do you take, John Morant or Zion Williamson?
That's a lot to take away, though. I'm taking Zion from a standpoint of, you know, he's still young. When people talk about his strength and he's playing man amongst boys, which he is, but at the same time, at his size and strength right now, he's one of the bigger players in the NBA as well. You know, when you come just pound for pound, he's probably top five in weight. You know, was he about 275, 280?
He'd be the heaviest. I believe he'd be the heaviest player in the NBA.
Yeah,
God, what's the big dude who's
Boban? Okay,
only Boban weighs that much.
So I think, you know, as NBA players, I think he'll definitely lean out, but at the same time get stronger. I don't see him staying at 280. I think he'll hit his playing weight. Like once he's really, when we see the best design, he'll probably be around a 265. But I think, you know, he's so skilled and soft touch, and he can handle the ball. He can pass the ball. He gets knocked for shooting, but you know his job is going to be to learn to shoot. You know, for the next 15 years or however long he plays in the NBA. So I think the excitement factor and the wow factor and the way he dunks the ball, he's the number one pick. And I think, you know, a franchise like New York needs that. They need eyes, and they need someone who can fill seats. They need someone who's going to have a huge shoe contract that they can start making commercials about and all that kind of stuff. So I think he's more of a franchise revitalizing pick. Now when you talk straight skill,
yes,
RJ Barrett and the other kid Moreno are very, very skilled and very, very talented. So it's going to be, I said it like last week, I think this is going to be like a Carmelo, LeBron, D-Wade type of situation when you look at it, maybe 10 to 12 years where all three of these guys have very successful careers and have done very well for themselves.
Who's going to get that UCLA job? Matt Barnes, obviously a UCLA alum, continues to join us. You got any idea? Like, it has been really a state-held secret who gets the UCLA job.
Yeah, there's talks, there's rumblings about some big names. And then, you know, I heard Earl Watson did really well in his interview. You know, to me, if you can't get a historical name that's bigger than the program that could really change things around, I think for once they need to go grassroots with someone that can get some of the alumni back and really build that UCLA pride back up that the school so desperately needs.
Yeah, it is interesting. Like, look, I having been in that position before, I can tell you that like part of the sale is like, hey, look, recruiting is about telling a story.
Mm-hmm.
When it's your story, it's a lot easier to tell, right?
A lot easier to tell.
And then, of course, the bringing back guys, instead of having to be told, hey, this guy played here then, right, and this guy played right here then. I mean,
especially with how many guys. I mean, we have a UCLA group chat where there's about 20 of us, anywhere from, you know, Charles O'Bannon to Toby Bailey to Baron Davis, Earl Watson. All of us are still very well connected. And that's the disconnect with UCLA, is there's no connection with the alumni.
Right. Because the former coaches aren't necessarily around.
Right.
I know that Coach Herrick is now at Cal State Northridge, mm-hmm. but I wonder if Charles Rochlin, why he doesn't get on that group. I'm an old school UCLA guy. All right, Matt Barnes. Here's what I think the Lakers are. Have you noticed that all the moves the Clippers have made? Blake Griffin traded. Chris Paul traded. Tobias Harris traded. Did anyone see those moves coming? Did anyone see them coming?
Poker hand, poker faces.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that's generally the way the NBA works, right? When Kawhi Leonard was moved to the Toronto Raptors, there was no rumors of, right?
Mm-mm.
So here's how I relate it. And you've been married, you have kids, you know how this works. Like, there are times as a dad where you gotta sneak out early. And when I say sneak out, it sounds sneaky, but I'm just saying you got to get out of the house early, mm-hmm. go get coffee or go to work. And when the kids are asleep, you can't wake them up.
Mm-hmm.
And some dads just don't have the ability to be ninja dads. You know, they step on every Lego, they stub their toe, they rattle their keys constantly,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, there's a way to pick up your keys where instead of doing this and wake somebody up, you grab them,
mm-hmm.
and you grab the key,
mm-hmm.
and then you have them in your hand. The Lakers are the guy that's rattling the keys, making the noise, when they get up in the morning. Like, everyone sees them coming. Why is that?
I think it's, you know, the old ad of loose lips sink ships.
Yeah.
And I think they're almost a desperation stage where if they have a good move, they want to tell the world because, you know, they didn't do a very good job last season. So they want to let everyone know, like, okay, well, we're, you know, with Magic, we're going to get another one next year. And this is the coach we're going after now. And this is what's going on. You know, I think it may be an LA thing. It may be a Laker thing, or it may be a fact of, okay, we haven't done so well thus far. So let me say what our plans are, and maybe that'll take some pressure off us. But to me, that's backwards thinking. To me, you have to move very strategically this summer with everything you do, from trades to coaches to if there's management changes, everything has to be very strategic, because they could possibly be at a point where, you know, they're dangling all their young talent again and don't really trade for anybody. So then you got to bring these same guys that you tried to trade at the trade deadline, you tried to dangle them all summer, and then you're trying to tell them, okay, now we believe in you, let's have a good season. So I think this has to be a very big, quiet, from a strategic standpoint, summer, but they really need to make some stuff happen.
The problem with that, though, is, and that's smart, problem, though, is now we get the Rick Carlisle story. Which
right.
Look, Rick Carlisle makes sense, right? Offensive mastermind, guy who's got a healthy ego, but it's supported by the fact he's been in two
very
NBA
good.
Finals and,
mm-hmm.
and won an NBA championship against LeBron.
Right.
And, you know, part of the deal is, in order to win in the NBA, you have to have respect to the locker room. In order to have respect to the locker room, you have to have one in the NBA. So, like, I get, now, the Doc Rivers thing. Okay, was that just floated? Was that Doc trying to get a new contract, which he got with the Clippers? Or was that a real possibility?
I heard it was a real possibility. And when I first heard, I'm just like, no way. You know, like, to me, the Clippers look like they're on the up and up. They look like a smooth situation. But then I happened to be somewhere the day it broke. And the people I was working with are, you know, very entwined to, you know, what's going on. And they said that was a real situation. Now, whether because it broke and it got so big that they had to kind of hush that up, they don't want to have a distraction going into the playoffs, because all of a sudden now he has a handshake deal to be the coach next year. You know, I've never really heard a handshake deal. You know, normally if you're getting an extension, you're going to sign it. So, but for what I was told that day, that it was a serious move.
Okay, so that's not going to happen. I don't think the Carlisle thing is going to happen. I don't think Jason Kidd's getting the job. Dude, you can't go on TV talking about a job that's not open. Like, that does not go over well in most NBA circles, right? So then you have, you know, Mark Jackson, you got Ty Lue, you got, you know, college coaches out there. Like, who's the guy who can fix it?
I don't know if there's a coach that can fix it. To be honest with you, I think you kind of have to go more along the lines of, this team is built, this is LeBron's team, so to speak. So I think you got to get a LeBron guy from that standpoint. Maybe someone that can get out the way and let LeBron be LeBron. But I think more than anything, you need personnel, you know, that fits him. They didn't have any from the beginning last year. You know, everyone was excited about the team, but a glaring weakness was shooting. You know,
yeah.
LeBron is very successful when the court is spaced. He can attack and he can penetrate and kick or score. They didn't have that kind of spacing this year, mixed with a lot of other stuff. So I think more than a coach, I mean, a coach will be important somewhat, but this is a players' league more than anything. You need a coach that can, you know, have respect, obviously, but then probably his best attribute for the Lakers is going to be to get out the way.
Yeah, the one question I have is, he was able to cover up some of those shooters' weaknesses defensively for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and now he can't, right?
Right?
And so it dramatically
yeah.
changes when you kind of got to hide LeBron
right.
defensively. Last thing, I don't know if you saw the story, you're a former Warrior. Jordan Bell was suspended for a game, and apparently it was because he charged a candle from like Bed Bath & Beyond to Mike Brown's room. Right, and I guess it was like a running prank but there has to be something more to the story than just like a $15 candle.
Yeah, I remember, this is a funny story. I remember when we were in Phoenix with Shaq and me, him, Steve, Raja. We all went to eat one day and we charged a huge bill to Terry Porter's room, and they were pissed. Like, we ate and they were pissed. I might have just snitched, my bad. But anyway, so this is something that happens where, you know, players will charge stuff to other people. It happened on the Clippers before, charging stuff. So that's funny. But for him to be suspended, I think there has to be a little bit more, because we charged a lot of money on some coaches' bills and no one ever got suspended.
Can the Celtics get it together before the playoffs?
I think so. They're such an intriguing team, and I think if there wasn't so much drama with the Lakers, that would have been more dissected, because I think that was a very unhappy locker room. But then at times you see how talented they are. And I think more than anything, normally a team has to, you know, mold their game to the superstar. I think this is one exception where Kyrie has to mold his game to what those younger players are doing, because they've done it without him. I think if Kyrie can do that, go out there, play basketball, share the ball, have fun, they're going to be, you know, they're definitely someone that can come out of the East.
You know what the one that no one's talking about? the Thunder. Like, the Thunder have gone from second best team in the West, legit challenger, to, you know, eighth seed in the West. Played better last time out against the Pacers, but what happened to Thunder's chemistry?
I think a little bit of, to me, it's always been less is more with Wes, Westbrook, and I think that he showed flashes this year where he's kind of taken a little bit of a backseat and let Paul do the bulk of the scoring, because normally a point guard shooting that much is not going to work if you're called on to be the main distributor. You know, Steph can get away with taking 20 shots because they have a lot of other distributors on that team, the guys that get people make plays for other guys. But Russ is counted on so much to distribute as well that I think when he takes around 15 to 16 shots instead of 24 to 25 shots, obviously they're a better team.
What's going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, 3 and Out podcast, brought to you by the Colin Cowherd Podcast Network. If you like Colin's show, you will like mine. This week, owners' meetings, coaches' pictures. You know we're talking about new rule changes. I think the 4th and 15 / onside kick rule is fascinating, and Gronk retires. Again, John Middlecoff, 3 and Out podcast. Go subscribe.
I think the reaction to the NFL changing the replay rules where you can either challenge calls or non-calls on pass interference, or, of course, under 2 minutes, they can review calls or non-calls on pass interference, judgment calls, if you will, has been met generally with, oh, okay, well, they saw the problem and they tried to fix the problem, right? There's a certain pragmatism to it where you're like, look, you can be dug in all you want, but this was clearly a mistake and we made a fix. But there's a law of unintended consequences, right? The intended consequences of this type of rule are to get it right. That's it. To always get it right. To take a snap judgment out of the hands of an official and put it in the hands of somebody who is removed from the field of play, removed from the officiating crew, and just can look at it and view it and see it and rule on it in a timely fashion where they have, instead of just having two eyes, they can have 20. Makes sense, right? And in truth, the idea of having an official using their eyes to make calls in games of this speed, this quickness, this explosiveness, do you know what the most unreliable testimony in a courtroom is? Right? Like, we're taught by some of our leaders and by conspiracy theorists to not trust science. But scientific fact, 97% is a scientific fact. When there's DNA evidence and it's 1 in a billion, 1 in a trillion, that means that's the guy, right? The least reliable testimony is eyewitness testimony. It just is. I don't know, you ever seen the TV show Brain Games? You understand? The Brain Games. And one of the Brain Games episodes, they'll have somebody come and they'll be talking to people and somebody will come and steal somebody's wallet and watch right before everybody's eyes. And then, hey, describe what they walked, what they wrote in on what. And everybody's got it. No one actually remembers correctly. Why? Because eyewitness testimony is, in fact, the least trustworthy testimony. Just is. Corroborating evidence is actually more accurate, just is. So if we really want perfect, then you kind of have to take the human element completely out of the sport. But since we're not willing to do that, we're going to try and perfect something which is imperfect, but really, really good, which is NFL officiating. I was watching the Sweet 16 last night. Tennessee was taking on Purdue. Purdue had a huge lead. Tennessee comes storming back, actually took the lead late. They're up 2 points. And that's when Carson Edwards gets the ball in the corner, shoots a 3-point shot, and appears to get fouled. Now, this comes on the back of Carson Edwards driving to the basket, and the ball gets deflected, and from one replay angle, looked like it might have gone off his leg. But if you look, and I thought they did a good job on the game saying, hey, look, when that ball gets deflected, if you look at a different angle and you look at the fact that the ball doesn't move, doesn't change trajectory, it's Purdue basketball. So what do they have to do? They have to go to the monitor And it was like a 5-minute review. And oh yeah, by the way, Purdue gets a timeout that they didn't earn, right? They just drove to the basket and Grant Williams, the star for Tennessee, deflects the basketball clean, and it should have been Purdue's basketball out of bounds. Now, did it give Tennessee a chance to set their defense? Yes, but it gave Purdue a chance to draw up a play. And this is exactly what is going to happen in the National Football League under 2 minutes. You remember, they have to review not just penalties, but non-penalties on pass interference. What's one of the magic to the National Football League is, hey, how many timeouts do you have? When do you ground the football? Do you get out of bounds? Do you throw it over the middle? This totally changes the sport. Forget about the fact that NFL guys are like, wait a second, Al Riveron in New York, who we don't trust to make calls anyway, is going to make calls on our game? And in super slow-mo, pass interference sometimes looks like it always occurs. There's always contact before a play, right? Do we really want to call split-second contact right beforehand? I mean, honestly, the Rams-Saints game, even though it was an error, it was also, one, a bad throw, and two, it all depends upon where your camera angle was. You know, that Fox camera, that was behind the play. Behind the play, it looks like, wow, what an incredibly blown call. When it's even with that angle right there, if you're watching on Fox Sports 1, I can't believe they missed that call. But if you look at where the side judge was, equal with the play, it was bang, bang. It was right as the football arrives. And, oh, yeah, by the way, it was a bad throw by Drew Brees, who was thrown over the middle when it should have been thrown to his outside shoulder or back shoulder. But the bigger point is this. Say you have no timeouts, and you're under a minute to go, and you throw a football in a play like that, and it's not pass interference, but they have to review it. Guess what you get? Free timeout. So in addition to the fact that it's really hard to watch games in person where there's all kinds of untimely delays, forget about the fact that it screws up the actual rhythm of a football game and allows everybody to catch their breath. Just the idea that it gives you a timeout that you didn't earn. That's what happened to Purdue last night. Now, they're able to benefit and get fouled on a three-point shot and make two free throws and then go into overtime and win the basketball game. But that review, the process of that review, while it's and you can sit there and go, well, all you got to do is put a time limit on it. Why? You started with the premise of, we put this rule in to get it right. Why not take the time and get it right? And I'm not sitting here saying that replay doesn't work and that we haven't had blown calls that could have been fixed. Patriots, it looked like a fumble against the Kansas City Chiefs, did it not? Julian Edelman covering a punt. Looked like it hit his hand, looked like it hit his thumb. Then when you get the right review, right angle, you're like, oh, okay. No fumble. But when it comes to plays of judgment, bang, bang plays where there's always contact, forget about the fact that sometimes the offense pushes off to create space, then the defense closes up that space. Are we going to go back and call a penalty in the offense? Forget about all that. Dude, 5 minutes? For a timeout you didn't earn? Ugh.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
I was told a long time ago that the smartest guy in the room usually says the least, right? There's the old adage, you have two ears and one mouth, listen more and speak less. Or maybe here's the more effective parallel. Be a ninja dad. Ninja dad. To do The Herd, we usually meet a couple hours before the show. And I don't live right next to the studio, so I like to get up super early in the morning. But if I get up in the morning, my dog gets up with me. And he wants to go to the park. And I have a couple of chores. Take him to the park. Get myself some coffee. Get my wife a chai. Come back. And listen, if he hears me in my room or in any other room of the house, he's not trying. He's clomping around on the wood floor. Now, the way to be a ninja dad, even with that dog is to take off his collar the night before, to take your keys and put it close to the door, to make sure you have socks on, because no matter how quiet you think you are with bare feet, you're much quieter with socks on. Make sure you're not wearing the type of pants that slosh. Shh, 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 shh. Even when you pick up your keys, don't pick them up like this. Grab the keys with your hand softly. if you're going to brush your teeth. Sorry, dude. You're going to spit, but you got to do it quietly, and you can't wash the spit out. That's part of the deal. Don't flush the toilet. No matter how gross your wife thinks it is, the second you flush the toilet, the dog is up, the dog is up, the kids are up, the kids are up, the wife is up, and nobody's happy. Instead, could be a ninja dad. Get outside. Get in the car. Close the door. Roll down the street. And you're on your way. They're asleep. You're relatively happy. You didn't have to take the dog to the park. And you get on your way to work. Now, the Lakers are the guy that forgets to take the collar off, forgets to turn off the alarm, so they open up the door. Weep, 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 weep. The Lakers are the guy that picks up the keys. They wake up. Your alarm goes off, not once, but they press snooze, and then it goes off twice. In case anyone wasn't awake, everybody's awake. Every move they have made, they have telegraphed it, right? Boy, actually, there's an analogy that maybe needs refining. Does anybody know what a telegraph is? Is there anybody alive that actually has used a telegraph anymore? A telegraph was something that used to send out, you'd tell somebody else, and they would use some sort of Morse code and send it along the lines back from World War II. That's what the Lakers have done. From who they were going to acquire in the offseason to potential trades during the season to now potential hires for next season. They haven't even fired Luke Walton, and there's already, well, we want Doc. No, we want somebody else. No, we want Rick Carlisle. No, we want this. No, everyone knows their moves beforehand. It's almost like they're playing cards, but instead of the cards looking at them, the cards are facing everybody else. See? See? I kind of got close to a full house. No, you have one ace. They just need to do everything in the shadows like every other NBA team. Remember when the Clippers were going to trade Blake Griffin? Was there any warning? Nope. When the Clippers traded Chris Paul for like 15 players, any warning? Nope. When they traded Tobias Harris, any warning? Like, don't tell me it's LA. The Clippers have operated in the shadows and no one knew. The Knicks traded Kristaps Porzingis. The same day he said he wanted to be traded, he was traded. There wasn't this buildup. Wasn't this nonsense? They just need one mouth, two ears. Listen more. Operate in the shadows. Be ninja dads. You want to change your culture? First thing you can do is stop sharing your information with people who are going to leak it to the media. Everybody wants to be important. Everybody wants to share their story. Everybody wants to see it on the bottom line, whether it's Woj or Broussard or whoever it is. Shams. Oh, I'm gonna text this guy and get my story out. No, no, no. Shut it down. Get into your bunker. Make your moves. And don't let anybody know they're going to happen till they've already happened.